I found that I could pick out certain metrics that said, right, if you're a midfielder, these are the particular metrics that the midfielders from the best performing teams in this case are scoring highest in. And if you're a wide player, these are the metrics they're scoring highest in. If you're a striker, these are them. And what you start to see is a bit of a pattern. And I have to admit, I didn't expect to see this.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 30 of the Attacking the Championship podcast. My name's Tom Butterfield. I'm your host. And as always, let me welcome our resident guest, our certified data analyst. He's our scout and FA licensed coach and intermediary, David Bromley. How are you, David?
I'm very well, Tom. Thanks very much. Yeah, you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, mate. I'm doing good. Yeah, nice to good. Be in the 30s for our episodes.
Yeah, I know. It just races by, doesn't it?
I know. It's crazy. So we've only got maybe 6 or 7 weeks left?
I hadn't been thinking about it in terms of weeks, but yeah, I've been thinking about it in terms of games. It must be about that, yeah.
And we've had some twists and turns since last time, because I think last time we were talking about the potential of Watford and Middlesbrough being pulled into the relegation zone, and Middlesbrough went and put back-to-back wins together.
Yeah.
So they're now looking more at the playoffs than they were at the lower end of the table.
Yeah. Well, they've been a bit like that for the whole season, haven't they, really? You know, you think they've turned a corner, and all of a sudden then they get sort of dragged back into a run of poor results. But yeah, so there have been a few false starts for Middlesbrough, really.
Certainly has. I mean, they're only sitting 5 points off the playoffs now, which is amazing to think that they're there considering the season they've had.
Yeah, but I think, as you said last week, it's so concentrated, isn't it, between the bottom and the top. And I don't think there's a game. I was having a quick look at the weekend's games again. I don't think there's a game that you couldn't say has something at stake. I mean, even the Middlesbroughs have probably still got an eye on, look, if we could just put together a really strong run, as they have done in past seasons, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they could sort of squeeze into sixth place, is it?
No, absolutely. I mean, you've got Cardiff sitting there with Preston on 53, Middlesbrough on 53. I think the goal difference is probably going to hurt all three of those teams, because it is getting to that stage of the season where it is worth an extra point almost, isn't it?
Yeah, and when you look at Coventry, and I mean, and they're on 57 points, but they've got 16 positive goals against the others that have got one or negative. So it is definitely worth another point. Mm-hmm. And look at West Brom in fifth, and the two teams below them, Norwich and Hull, are many, many goals behind. So that is another point.
So yeah, it's getting interesting. And then we flick down to the bottom of the table. I mean, Rotherham, we already sort of called last rights on Rotherham a few weeks ago, didn't we?
We did, but, really. Sadly,
but then we've
got
Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield, Birmingham, QPR, Stoke, Blackburn and Plymouth, all within 3 points of each other.
Within a win of each other,
crazy, isn't it? And then Millwall and Swansea are only a couple of points ahead of them. So they're certainly not out of it. Out of those teams that I mentioned before, from Sheffield Wednesday up to Plymouth, who are you most concerned about dropping into that bottom three?
Oh, well, I'd be concerned about Birmingham. I think Stoke, really, because, again, you know, they'll get a good result here and there, but it's just not sticking, is it?
No.
Blackburn's recent results have been pretty poor, but I say that I've only lost one of the last five, but they've drawn four. Mm-hmm. Compared with their earlier in the season, it's been pretty dire. And they've got the top scorer in the division.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Because I think QPR seem to be, I mean, they're still right in there, but they seem to be, they've turned something of a corner, haven't they?
Yeah, the arrow's pointing a different direction, isn't it, for QPR at the moment.
It is. What about you? What do you think?
I'm concerned for Plymouth, to be honest. They haven't looked good, and I think that so much is dependent on their home form that if they don't get the results there, I don't see them picking up much away. And I just wonder whether the fatigue setting in, that little bit of inexperience, because they've got quite a few young guys in there, whether that's going to really sort of suck them down into that, to even closer to that bottom three. So I hope not, because if any of you have listened to the podcast, you know that I like Plymouth and I like the way that the club is run and the style of play and some of the players they've got. But yeah, that's probably my biggest concern, I would say, is Plymouth getting drawn into it.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with you on that. I think they definitely need a boost from somewhere, don't they?
Yeah, that's it. But I suppose we could say that for all of those teams, couldn't we? You know, they need two or three, results, good results, wins ideally on the bounce to really, push them away from that zone.
Yeah, well, Plymouth's next game, I mean, they're on Saturday at home to Preston. The home form was always the thing that you thought would probably see them okay, but that's been unpredictable. So it could do with trying to tighten up
on the home really form. Need they? That win, don't they? Because they've still got that game in hand. If they win it, they'll make an absolute fool out of me. Because I've been saying that Preston are going to fall away at any moment.
Not just you.
I think any minute Preston are going to fall away any minute, and they've just hung around, and I think even Preston fans
probably
have not enjoyed the ride this season. And I think even if they get into the playoffs, you might find that they're not particularly sort of happy with it still of the season they've had. So, yeah, it's a bizarre league, which is why we love it and why we disagree with TalkSport.
Well, it's reliably unreliable, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, for sure. That's the point. And we didn't expect it to be anything other than what it is, which is you can't call any of the... I'm just looking at these fixtures for the weekend. Uh-huh. You know, I can't even look at Leeds v Millwall with any real confidence and say, I know what's going to come out of that one. You know, a few weeks ago, you'd have said that was about as nailed on as you could imagine.
Yeah. But and Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday as well.
Yeah.
You would have thought that was a home banker, but...
You would, but yeah.
Things have changed a little bit, haven't they?
Yeah. Long may the drama continue, eh?
Now, I asked you a question, didn't I, during the week?
You did.
David, that
I
wanted to know, because I read a few articles about football, a bit of an anorak like that, if you do love football. And they just kept popping up, people saying, oh, you know, these, look at this guy, you know, he's done this and done this, and what a great player he is. Popping all these stats in there. I just thought, with the most ridiculous statistics, I felt, pointless stats that really pointed to nothing from the player. And if anything, sometimes I think these stats that I've pulled out actually show a weakness of the player rather than a strength. So can I give you one of my least favourite stats to start off with? So one of them is the old classic distance covered.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
What's your thoughts about distance covered, David?
Distance covered is... it sort of takes me back, really, because it was one of the first, I think, one of the first stats that commentators of the game could easily get hold of.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it would be important, to find out the players that were getting around the pitch, getting involved in the game. And then a few players started to game it, I think.
Right.
You hear stories and some of them probably have a seed of truth about them. And I think that Zabaleta, for example, when the ball would go out of play, would be making little 10, 15-yard doggy runs just to get his numbers up. That might not be true, but if it isn't, it's come from somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, again, I used to hear about Robbie Savage roaring around the centre of the midfield. And make it, after lost causes, tiring himself out, but getting great numbers before anybody was keen to look beyond just the obvious. You know, it might have actually persuaded a few people of a few things that they thought they could learn from it. But then it became, we want to know distance covered at high intensity rather than just distance covered. And then beyond that, more sort of sophisticated metrics as well. So I'd agree with that. I think that was probably the first opportunity that some players had of I suppose they deserve a little bit of credit for the initiative.
Absolutely. I remember having a watching a game with a friend of mine, a Champions League game, because I always remember it used to pop up on the Champions League sort of on ITV, I think it was. It came up on the players as they were being substituted and what have you. And I remember one player going off and my mate going, "Oh, look at that, 12.5K he's done. God, that's amazing." And it was the 88th minute that he'd come off in. I said, "Well, you could have, you know, if you're interested in distance covered," I said, "just get a 10,000 meter runner, just to run up and down, just run around." I said, "He'll just run around at the same pace, but you know, for 25 minutes,
and
he'll cover nearly 12.5K, you know."
Yeah, I wonder if, because you know, how long is the ball in play for?
Mm-hmm.
You could think about it like that. You could say, well, we know it's a 90-minute game, but the ball's in play for a certain number of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you could work out easily for the period of time the ball isn't in play, how much distance you could cover, even at a fairly leisurely pace, just by keeping on the move, which might, a lot of that might be pointless, but how much could you bump your numbers up just by doing that? I mean, it's a silly kind of suggestion, but it gives you, it leads you to realise that it's not really important, is it?
It's a pointless stat, David, is what it is.
On its own, it's a pointless stat, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes, out of context.
Yes.
You can use it. I think there are contexts within which it is useful, but on its own, pointless, really.
I remember there being a stat back when the original Ronaldo, R9, was at Real Madrid, and he got pulled into the manager's office because he'd actually covered less distance than Iker Casillas, the goalkeeper, in a 90-minute game. But I don't think this
did
was
he score a hat trick though.
He probably did. Yeah, to be fair, he probably did.
Yeah, but, might have been his
I don't think he was defense. At his fittest during his Real Madrid days.
Probably
but,
not.
Okay, pointless stat number two: pass completion percentage.
That's, you know what, you were asking me about these, and I could think of two right off the bat, and that is the second one I thought. So they're the same ones I thought of.
Right, okay.
Which, I agree with you that.
What is it about pass completion percentage that sort of gets your heckles up then, David?
Well, you know, it's all about risk-reward, isn't it? Because the more difficult the pass, the more chance it won't be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you're giving some thought to the appropriate pass in the circumstances, and you're not just trying difficult passes for the sake of it,
mm-hmm.
then the more difficult the pass, if it is successful, the more the reward is.
Absolutely.
The higher the reward. So it's all about, you can run around making 5-yard lateral passes with virtually no risk. You know, I could do that.
Yeah.
Assuming I could keep on my feet for long enough. But, you know, anybody can get the ball, pass it 5 yards to a player under no pressure and get 100% success rate for that pass. And that, what have they actually contributed? But then you can take the ball forward. You can identify, you know, you might be able to make a really threatening pass between two players to open up the space for a teammate. It's a difficult, relatively difficult pass to make, and sometimes it's going to go wrong. But if it goes right, it's a big, potentially a big reward. So it is all about, really, again, context, isn't it, that one?
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm always very suspicious of any attacking player or midfield player who has a pass completion percentage in the high 80s and 90s, because for me, that shows that they've just taken the easy route most of the time, likely.
You could say that.
If you watch the game back and you see that they've actually threaded the needle on some great through balls and everything and they've made them, that's great. But I think anyone who is saying, "Oh, this is a great player because they've got a 94-95% completion rate," I think you need to look at, like you said, how many little lateral passes or backwards passes or passes out of pressure zones, you know, did they do during the match? And I think it can actually show a psychological weakness of a player, potentially, one that is risk averse rather than one that wants to try and win the game. So they're trying to not lose the ball, but they're not necessarily going to contribute, as you said, towards scoring a goal and winning a game.
I think that's a good point, because what you're bringing out in that point is also that there are times when a team is not doing well, confidence is low. Some players in those situations will still want the ball. Mm-hmm. Some players will still be looking to make passes that will, you know, benefit the team. Other players will be hiding, really, yeah, not wanting the ball, wanting to make safe options all the time, not wanting to be the one who was the last player to touch the ball before the team let a goal in. Because they're obviously, yeah, inevitably what happens is, hopefully not at the better teams, but certainly in amongst a lot of the fans, you know, they'll tend to kind of, we let a goal in. He lost it there, or, you know, his pass broke down. Well, it's not always about that. Sometimes there's usually a lot more to it than just who was the last player involved. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's kind of human nature that when things aren't going well, and they might not be going well for you individually, you might be kind of persuaded to, look, I want to get through the game and I don't want it to be my fault.
Yeah.
But that's not what's going to get you out of a slump, is it?
No.
If you're the head coach, you're going to be wanting players who are going to be bigger than that and say, well, okay, give it to me. I'll do something with it, or I'll take the risk that, you know, if it doesn't go well, you know, I'm still involved. So actually, it's a good point you make there, really.
I was going to come up with a third one, but I forgot to write them down, to be honest. So I had two. So I had distance covered and pass completion percentage. So are they the two that you had on your list as well?
They are the two. Yeah,
go on.
Can
you think of a third one?
There's probably tons. What I would say is you could almost look at any stat, really, mm-hmm, and say, without context, it's potentially pointless and meaningless. You know, it's the old story of, well, statistics, there's lies, damn lies and statistics. You can make these things mean whatever you seek to make them mean. Mm-hmm. So it's dangerous, isn't it, to pick something without really understanding the context within which you're trying to use that stat.
Yeah.
Because you could use it, you know, to take a silly one, you could take fouls, you know, and you could say, well, that they can't ever be a valuable statistic. They can't ever be considered to be beneficial. Well, maybe they can. Maybe they're an indicator that somebody is more aggressive, mm-hmm, in their play, and yellow cards even. I'm not suggesting that players go out and seek yellow cards, but you may find that if you're asking your team, in certain circumstances, this might actually be relevant to what we're going to talk about today, to change their approach in certain cases, under certain conditions in matches, then I think you're going to have to recognise that you maybe are going to pick up more fouls and more yellow cards in the process. Mm-hmm. So again, there's something to be learned from that stat, even though you might think on its own, well, what's that telling me, other than somebody's, you know, that they're operating in a way that is not beneficial. So I think it's all about context, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Sorry for butting in, Tom.
That's okay.
There's probably no stat that you could honestly say is completely pointless. It's all about, are you using it in a context within which there's value, or are you just being either lazy or sort of ignorant, really?
Okay, mate. But the main body of work that you've been doing, we've had you locked down in the dungeon working away on.
Yeah, I've had another week of, like the previous week when you asked me. The trouble is, when you ask good questions, you know, it's interesting. But I think I was saying to you sort of at first, well, I suppose I should say what the question was. So you said to me, last week's episode, we were exploring this concept, this phenomenon, really, of, you know, when teams concede the first goal, how vital is that? Because we've started to hear more and more in recent years that, you know, it's all about the first goal. Yeah. You know, we'll look what happens. So we wanted to explore, with reference to the Championship, number one, is it all that important? And number two, if it is, why is it? What does it tend to do? And can we dig in under the surface a bit? Some teams have been particularly bad at coming back. Other teams have been relatively good. You said to me, look, if you were one of these teams that were, you've identified that it's clearly a problem area for you after conceding the first goal, apart from trying not to concede the first goal, What might you do in terms of recruitment when you were looking at players? Might you be able to look at players' particular styles and particular players and say, well, we can't, if we had some more players like this, it would benefit us in our attempt to improve our performances and our achievements after conceding first. So that was, you know, I went away and thought, well, yeah, okay, that should be easy enough, which is usually how it starts. I should know better, really. But I thought, well, let's try and do that. So a little bit of kind of context for this, we've been looking at attacking players, you know, as is our inclination on the pod. So we always talk about the attacking support players who are basically midfielders, the chance creators who are often wide players, not exclusively, but often they are, and the strikers. So for midfielders, wide players and strikers, I've decided that the way I'd look at this would be to take the teams that have done well after conceding the first goal and sort of look at them as models of teams that seem to be able to get this right. And then to look at the output of the players in those teams and look at maybe 100 different performance metrics and see whether there are some correlations between the outputs of the midfield players, the outputs of the wide players, the outputs of the strikers that correlate with the team's success in coming back after conceding first. So if you like, we're kind of looking at, well, is there a pattern emerge that we can see emerging from the way that players play when they're playing for teams that do well against the way that they play for the teams that aren't doing well? Hopefully that makes some sense. Mm-hmm. I've adjusted the figures for possession because the first thing you think of is, well, all the players that are playing for the best clubs are going to do the best, irrespective of anything else. So I've adjusted it so that, you know, just the fact you're playing for Leeds or Leicester, for example, as opposed to, say, you know, Swansea or Sheffield Wednesday, shouldn't be the overriding influence. So hopefully I've tried to sort of shield that out of the answer. And what I then did is I produced a sample of players. I've tried to find the things that would be the most closely correlated with the best performances. And then I've gone out and for midfielders and then for wide players and then for strikers, I found 250 players initially on a worldwide basis. There are certain criteria. They've got to have played enough games and that kind of thing, and they've got to be within a certain price range and a certain age range, because we're thinking about if we were a championship club, so we're not particularly interested in someone saying, well, you know what, if you went out and signed the whole of the Real Madrid midfield, you might improve your chances at coming back. What we're trying to do is pretend that, you know, we've got our restrictions, but we want to bring in these samples of players. And then we've used our model a bit to analyse these players' performances in conjunction with or in accordance with those metrics that were the most closely aligned with the most successful teams. And so after doing that, it was quite interesting because I found that I could pick out certain metrics that said, right, if you're a midfielder, these are the particular metrics that the midfielders from the best performing teams in this case are scoring highest in. If you're a wide player, these are the metrics they're scoring highest in. If you're a striker, these are them. And what you start to see is a bit of a pattern. And I have to admit, I didn't expect to see this. What I expected to see was that teams that are doing best after conceding the first goal are the teams that keep their discipline, that will, because the implication being, when your opponents score first, they're probably going to drop 10, 15 yards generally as a team. They're going to take up shape, which we talked about last week, a good solid defensive shape against you, because you then need to take the initiative. They've done their job, as it were. And so I felt expected to find that what would happen would be that the teams that had done the best were the teams that were able to make short, accurate, threatening passes in that regard, trying to probe and find their way through teams who dropped back and sort of overloaded the midfield and the defence. But I didn't find that. In fact, I sort of found the opposite. I found that the teams that had done the best were teams whose players had got the highest scores for more sort of up-tempo play, you know, more aggressive, more direct in many ways, taking the initiative, making progressive passes, making accurate passes to the penalty area, funnily enough, committing more fouls, which sort of suggests maybe that they're a little bit more on the front foot, maybe trying to sort of, you know, take the game to their opponent a bit more rather than sitting back and passing it. Lots of things that I would have, even some of the more attacking players, the wide players and the strikers, particularly the wide players, their defensive numbers were better, which suggested to me maybe that, you know, they really needed to compete. It was about physical competition and that kind of thing. So it was as if they'd gone in at half time. This is the way it came across to me. If they'd gone in at half time, a goal down, and the manager had said to them, right, you know, we're not taking the game to the opposition enough. We now need to take more initiative. We now need to give them less time on the ball, you know, get your foot in. When we get the ball, let's not look to be sort of probing and passing laterally across the pitch, because they'll be dropping. They'll be more than happy with that. What we need to do is catch them unawares. We need to be trying to make progressive passes. We need to be bringing the strikers right into the game, getting more touches from the strikers in the penalty area, more shots off, better in the air, for example. Strikers needed to be, the teams that did better coming back were the teams whose strikers were better aerially.
Interesting.
You know, which I took to mean, you know, if you can draw this sort of conclusion, well, it's a little bit old school. You know, it's a little bit, let's bring the striker into play early. Let's give them a chance. Let's get them against their defenders. And you know, obviously you've got to try and get accurate crosses in and so on. But so it was a little bit like, it was almost a little bit like, well, look, our best laid plans haven't worked out. Now we need to really kind of go back to something a bit more sort of, perhaps
old
a little,
school, really, isn't
old
it?
School, yeah. And I didn't think I was going to find that, but it seemed to be the case across the board. So with that in mind, what we did was these samples of players, as I say, we went out and found midfielders, wide players and strikers in the sort of right, hopefully in roughly the right sort of financial area and the right age area and so on. And then we ordered them in order of the things that I've just talked about, who were the best at doing these things. And the suggestion was maybe we need to be looking at these kinds of players. So first of all, I did it on a worldwide basis. So going back to this conclusion, really, I've said the overall message appears to be that after conceding the first goal, teams who perform the best make changes to the team accordingly. So they're taking that on board that they've conceded, and they're saying, let's now make sure that our approach to this game recognises that, you know, it's not the same as it was when we kicked off. The results appear to be best when there's a move to improve defensive effectiveness from midfielders and wide players and a more aggressive approach generally. This change is best accompanied by changing the passing strategy to include longer and more threatening passes and attempting to occupy the opposition's penalty area with strikers who are encouraged to engage less in build-up play, to shoot more and compete aerially. So, you know, sort of, well, you could call them subtle changes. I don't know that they are all
get
that
it in
subtle.
The box, Sam.
Get it in
the
there.
Box.
You know, you're not going to score if you don't get a shot off. So
exactly.
I think. So we started with these sample players from a worldwide perspective. And The criteria I used to begin with was these are midfielders. So I said they need to be, again, these are the sort of notional figures, but I've said they need to be between half a million and a million in valuation. Now, the reality is most of these players will cost you a lot more than that because, you know, the way that this software kind of works is it's a bit lagging. So it might sound a bit cheap, but you're going to have players in here considerably more valuable than that.
Yeah.
So, but we needed to put some criteria in there to get it to 250. 18 to 24 years old, and they've played at least 1,000 minutes. And you end up with the top 20 here, and they're from, interestingly, a player that we've talked about before, Victor Torp, at the top from Coventry. Uh-huh. Coventry are a team that have been pretty successful coming back from losing in the first goal. But, you know, again, I'm not going to say, because for every one of those, there's probably one that, you know, is the opposite. But it's interesting anyway. And then, you know, we sort of looked at these players a little bit just so that, because a lot of the time we don't know who these players are. You know, we get numbers up. Sometimes we do, but sometimes we get names from goodness knows where and we don't know who the players are. But, so, you know, 600,000 players now that you can look at theoretically. So the job is not, we've talked about this before, the job of recruitment is not to know players. It's to know about how to identify players in a particular way that is appropriate to the job you're doing, isn't it?
Out of interest on that point, David, I've started to listen to that book, Thinking Fast and Slow.
Okay.
And it's talking a lot about biases in there and availability bias and that sort of thing. So if you know a player and you've seen a player already, there's more chance that you'll probably recommend that player over another one you haven't seen, even though you don't know if they're going to be better or not. So I think it's an advantage not to know these players because then you don't have those sorts of availability or recency bias, do you?
Good point.
Having watched them.
I agree with that. Yeah, I do. I think that's it's sort of counterintuitive, isn't it, to say, well, actually, you don't want to. And I've felt that before, that for exactly that reason is that, you know, you tend to get players you like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that player, or players you, well, I can't see the big thing about that player. And they do influence you.
For sure.
So if they're just, in a way, if they are just names, then everybody starts with a blank sheet and it's all about the objectivity and not about your particular opinion. So that's a good point. So these top five, I just picked out the top five on that list, really, and said, you know, we could just have a quick look at. So Victor Torp, obviously, he's come into Coventry from Sarpsborg. We talked about him before he signed, didn't we, a few episodes ago, as he came up on one of our lists. And he's that kind of player, really. These are all sort of central midfielders, really. His numbers, the reason he's on this list, in fact, he's at the top of it, is that he has scored best in metrics that have been closely associated with teams who've done best after conceding the first goal. So that's the sort of, that's the context, that's the appropriateness that we've been talking about. We're not saying Victor Torp's the best central midfielder in the world, even within the confines of the financial criteria that we've put on this. All we are saying is he's somebody who has managed to deliver where other teams who've got players who've delivered in those areas have done pretty well in the area that you're trying to do well in.
Yeah.
So it's a place to start, isn't it? It's a place to watch him from. Yeah, so he came out,
if you're a team that was struggling to get back into games after conceding the first goal, then Victor might be a guy that you'd want to look at.
Exactly. So it's a way to order many, many hundreds of thousands of players in a way that you can start to at least evaluate them. So there's Victor. So number two on the list was Theo Leone at Anderlecht. A lot of, I noticed, I think, quite a few Belgians coming out in these. Coming out in this particular searches.
Really?
So, you know, he's 23 years old, central midfielder, he seems to be able to play either a defensive or an attacking role. been through their sort of national team at younger ages. So I imagine he's, you know, his pedigree is good. So, you know, that's another name. I don't know the guy really, but I think he might have popped up before, but, you know, it's not somebody I know much about particularly. But he came out as number two. There's a name we know. Finn Azaz came in at number three. Obviously, it's not a surprise that he's done well, but he's done well in these particular areas where you go a goal behind. Maybe he's a guy that you'd turn to in favour of some others because his particular output is, you know, similar to teams that have done well. Yeah. So there's Finn Azaz. Number four, Rocco Reitz at Borussia Mönchengladbach, 21 years old. Don't, you know, 10 million euros potentially is, so again, it's not, he's not going to be within the reach by the look of it of most of the championship. But, you know, if you were up in that sort of top end, but this was an area that you just felt was sort of letting you down, if the head coach was saying, look, I just don't feel I've got the options when we go a goal down to make the sort of changes that I feel would be beneficial.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about West Brom as we were earlier, because they were the team that, you know, we went to and said, look, what's going on? They can't get back. And looking at that last game at Huddersfield, when they conceded first and you tended to think, well, you know, looks like maybe this is going the way that most of these games have gone. Changes were made, let's just put it that way, because they ended up storming it, didn't they, in the second half? And the two halves were so different. And it looked like, you know, maybe this is the case, that it looked like they were sort of reverting to a bit more direct, a bit more high tempo, a bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
It worked out well for them. It's not always going to work out all the time, is it? Sometimes you're going to, you know, you're going to leave yourself exposed. Then you lose a second goal and then you might think we're really in trouble. So these things, we're not trying to pretend that, you know, all you need to do is just plug this in here and turn that switch and that's the end of it. There are always judgments, but, you know, some teams, he obviously, Carlos Corberan felt that he had the personnel to make the changes that he made and so on. But I think a lot of the time, you get teams and it looks like they don't really have a plan B. They're very good at what they do, maybe, but if you can undo them, then they can't do anything different.
There does seem to be a bit of a fashion thing at the moment where coaches will just stick to the way they play regardless, you know, and it's almost like a badge of honour to say, no, we play this way and that's how we'll always play. And it's like, okay, I can understand that, but also you should be open-minded enough to say, well, if it's not working today, then we shouldn't really just keep doing what's not working. We should look to try and solve the puzzle another way, shouldn't we?
I think that's spot on, really. I mean, what you do know is, or you can be pretty confident, is if you're playing a team who score the first goal, they're not probably going to carry on doing what they were doing. They're probably going to change their game.
Yeah.
So what they call game state, which is what we're talking about, the game state has changed from you know, honours even to you're losing now.
Yeah.
But your opponent is winning. So they're going to have a different view of it. They're probably not going to carry on exactly the way they were. So what makes you think that if you approach this game with a certain game plan, that because when your opponent changes their game plan, you can still carry on with yours. It doesn't make a lot of sense, that, really, does it? Because if you knew they were going to play that way, you might not have set your team up that way in the first place.
Exactly.
So to ignore it seems a bit kind of, it seems strange, doesn't it? But you're right. Yeah, I think there is this feeling that, you know, we don't change, we do what we do. And there's a lot of praise, I think, given out. Oh, they didn't panic, you know, they did this.
Yeah.
And I think some of it's valid, you know, don't just lump the ball in the box from at the first opportunity and say, well, you know, you can't score if you're not up there. That's a little bit, that is a bit too sort of unsubtle. But I think there is probably a middle way, isn't there?
I'm thinking of one particular team that always plays a certain way, and that's it. Or one manager who plays a certain way and is very much praised for it in Pep Guardiola.
Mm.
Surely a bit easier when you've always got the best players in the league that you've always played in, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying that he's not a good coach. Don't get me wrong.
I'm going to be very careful I'm not seen to be criticising Pep Guardiola.
He's obviously a very good coach.
Mm.
But also, if you've got the best players, then that's got to be an advantage, isn't it? So you say then, is it the tactic or is it the players?
Yeah.
And probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
But I think playing that way or playing any way when you haven't got the best players to play that tactic has got to be a disadvantage, isn't it?
Yeah, because you're
going to have to be more flexible.
Yes. Because you could say, look, if you're Newcastle and notwithstanding financial fair play or profit and sustainability, you've got the money to do whatever you want to do. So you're starting out, really, you're the one who can take the initiative, aren't you? You don't really have restrictions, as I say, other than that. And they are restrictions, but over the course of time, you can decide how you want to play. Then you're going to fill your team with players that are the best examples of doing whatever it is you think is the best way to approach it. I suppose the point is, though, in that case, it's still down to you to decide in the first place how you want to play. Because, again, we don't want to sort of shoot ourselves in the foot by saying, yeah, you just buy the best players in the world. You don't actually, do you? You've got to have an idea first.
Yes.
And say, this is how I want to play, because there are lots of different strikers and they're not all the same.
No.
You might not even be playing with a centre forward. You might even say, we don't play with an outright striker. We play with attack-minded forward players. So, yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know, maybe for another day, but it's interesting.
We'll leave Pep alone now. Sorry,
leave
Pep.
Him alone. Yeah.
I'm sure he's
so listening. There's a name that I think as your championship team would struggle to probably attract.
Absolutely.
But Kobbie Mainoo, Man United, as it happens, as a midfield, central midfield player, we're just saying, not only has he done well, but his numbers, his particular profile fits the profile of a team that is looking to get back into a game. Mm. Not the only profile it fits, I'm sure, but he does come out very high in this particular search.
Do you think it's interesting with him where he's come in? There was calls for him to come into the team, wasn't there? And he came in, I think, for a few cup games, a few lesser cup games. And I find it interesting that you've got him and then the other central midfielders that have tended to be in there in Sofyan Amrabat, Christian Eriksen and Casemiro. I can't think of them being the sort of players that are going to be the guys that are going to stick their foot in, get about people, you know, up the tempo. Whereas this lad, you know, he's young, he's energetic, he gets about the pitch, he's mobile, he's athletic.
Mm.
He's exactly the sort of guy you need in there. And Scott McTominay as well is another one who you'd say, well, if I wanted a midfield who was going to get in amongst it, I would take McTominay over Casemiro and Eriksen any day of the week. Mm. Are they as technically gifted? Probably not. But this is the role we need him to play at the moment.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Man United are behind quite a lot more than they used to be.
Well, that's true. I mean, and the other thing is, I suppose what you're looking for, you know, you can have, it's not like the old days where you go, well, we've got 11 players and we've got a sub in case one of them gets injured. It's a squad game, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're able to pick a number of players and one of your objectives, if not the main objective, is to say, how do I pick players that will give me something different? Because if I need to change things, if if what we're doing isn't working, as you said earlier, then why I'm not going to want to keep doing the same, more of the same thing. I want to bring players in whose playing profiles are going to give me something different.
So it may be
that you have a preferred playing style. It may be your preferred playing style is a sort of dominate possession, pass the team to death, move them around the pitch, make all these sort of clever key passes and things like that, and smart passes. But what you want is to say, if things don't go our way, we are able to make changes, and those changes have to represent something different then, don't they?
Yeah.
So anyway, a championship team's going to struggle with him
to
get him in, not if they had him. So just moving on to the wide players, we did the same thing there. So we've got wide players in here. Again, we've got a minimum number of minutes they've had to have played. We've got an age group, not dissimilar, 18 to 24. It's a kind of nominal price range just to get the right number of players into the sample. And it gives us a 1 to 20 list, which sort of organises them. If we'd asked them, if you haven't listened to previous episodes, you might want to go back and listen to some of the earlier episodes where we talked about recruitment particularly. But we've got a way of being able to tell the model, the evaluation model, how we want it to evaluate the players. So we can put the same sample of players into it, but say, well, we want you to give particular emphasis to these things over those things, and then you'll get a list out that's different, in a different order. So in this particular case, we've just ordered it the way that, as I said to you earlier, we've identified work seems to work best for the teams that have managed to come back from losing positions. So that's why we've got the players in the order that we've got. So this is the top five sort of worldwide wide players for our particular case within this criteria. And number one is Zan Rogelj at Charleroi, again from Belgium, 24 years old. I've noticed that with these wide players, a lot of them are sort of specified. And again, it's a bit of a kind of, there's a lot of judgment in a sense. There's no discretion in our process, because we deliberately organise our process to be consistent. But where the discretion comes in is where certain data deliverers have categorised players as, you know, wingers or fullbacks, and we know there's an awful lot of play in that really these days. So the wide players that have appeared in our samples have tended to be, I suppose, less outright wingers and more sort of wing back stroke fullback, attacking fullbacks, which isn't surprising when you think of what we said, which was when you go a goal behind, you know, you want your wide players to be competitive, to be capable of playing at a high tempo, to be aggressive, to be defensively sound. But these players will have to have the ability to also deliver passes, because one of the requirements is going to be to deliver these threatening passes as well. So they can't be outright sort of old school sentries, you know, where they stand at the back post and win the headers only. They've got to be somewhat sort of wing back orientated. But I'm not that surprised to see there being quite a high representation of sort of wing backs rather than outright wingers. That's just a point, really. So he comes in at number one. Gary Manier, I think you say this, again from the Belgian league, KAS. Not a player I know, 24 years old.
It's not even a club I know, to be honest.
No. and has played in centre half as well, by the look of it. So, you know, I don't know. It's just, I think probably that he's the period that we've looked at, because obviously you specify a period that you're looking at, which is this season, I suspect has kind of, you know, demonstrated some abilities out wide. So I'm not quite sure why he's in there, just because his numbers put him in there. So it might be an interesting one to watch. You might eliminate some of these immediately. Yeah. Because sometimes what can happen in these things is that you set these things up, you know, you set your algorithm up to search a database and come back with some results. And your algorithm's designed to try to give you what you want. And then when you get the results back, sometimes you realize, oh, I've got to tweak that a bit because it's giving me some of this as well. And, you know, that can be the case.
Yeah.
So, but it, again, it's all part of the process, really. It's all part trying to address a specific objective, which is what we're trying to do here. Christian Borchgrevink, is that right?
Sounds as good as anyone can say.
I don't know. A Norwegian.
Borchgrevink.
Again, I don't know the guy. 24 right. years old again. You know, probably worth having a little look, at least from a sort of watching video clips and stuff to start with. Again, we've only just picked, I've just picked out the top five out of 250. So, you know, there's plenty of more work you can do on this, but
I'd imagine that the conversion of Scandinavian players into the championship would be quite good. And I'm saying that, talking about biases earlier, that's a bias, is I would just assume that knowing quite a few Scandinavian people, they've generally got a pretty good work ethic.
Yeah.
And they don't mind, you know, getting their head down and getting on with it. And that's going to be kind of what the championship is all about to a degree, isn't it? You're going to have to get your hands dirty at some point and get stuck in. So, I would have thought the Norwegian league would be quite a good, and the Swedish leagues as well.
Could be, couldn't it?
Place to look
at. Yeah. Well, like you say, there've been quite a few success stories.
Yeah.
From Scandinavia. This might be the top. This might be number five. Erik Junior Bokat from a Belgian club.
Join us next week for the Belgian summary.
Yeah. I mean, these are the wide players. So maybe they've got a bit of a domination of wide players. Again, the wide players who are exhibiting this kind of particular profile.
Yes. Yeah.
So I keep sort of hammering the same thing, I know, but just to sort of so we realise we're not necessarily saying these are the best players, but we're saying you may want to start looking at some of this kind of player if your problem is when you go behind, you want to be able to change it. So
they might be the best at playing that role that you need for your team,
Could be an interesting one. Again, 24, not a bad age. I think this is number five. Thierry Small at Charlton. Left-sided, sort of left-back stroke, left midfielder. 19 years old.
Yeah,
it's going to be
Southampton by the look of it.
So, you know, interesting, I think, on the face of it.
Yeah.
Charlton fans.
A player with a bit of pedigree there. England under-18 international. Looks like he might have played a bit at Everton. Did he maybe start at Everton?
He started at Everton.
Everton, then Southampton.
Yeah. He hasn't played. Again, I wanted to try and include. He hasn't played a huge number of games this season. I think he's only played six games, league games. So, again, it's fairly small sample size in this case. And we also, our numbers, as again, you would have heard if you've listened to the previous sort of recruitment episodes, but our numbers are adjusted according to the difficulty of opposition. So if you're playing at a relatively low level, you've got to do more to get into these lists. So, you know, it's looking all right. And he's only 19 years old.
Yeah, he's a young lad, isn't he?
So, yeah, I mean, it's one of them. You'd say, well, why wouldn't you just take a look at least?
Sure.
You know, from a technical point of view, these, I think, these are potentially the sort of where you might find the gems, aren't they?
Yes.
And I'm not saying that they're all going to be winners, but, you know, this is kind of a fairly early flagging up of somebody that, you know, once he's done it for a whole season and everybody knows about him, he's not this sort of notional £1 million. He's quite a bit more than that, and you probably won't get him anyway.
No,
because you know someone else will want him.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we just move on to the strikers, the worldwide sort of you know search for a striker of this ilk, if you like. Again, we've got a little bit of criteria. I've expanded the fee to up to 3 million, just for obvious reasons. But again, at age 19 to 26, after I've played at least 10 games. And we've got Tobias Lauritsen as number one for Sparta Rotterdam. And these guys, I've not, yes, is now what we'll see from these is I think they're a certain kind of striker, you know, which follow on from what we've talked about. You know, if you're going to change your style to a bit more old school, a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more physical, a little bit more early direct play, you're probably looking at this kind of competitor, aren't you?
Yeah.
So he's 26. He's near, you know, yeah, he's a big 196 meters. Yeah, there we are. I don't know much about him, but this is a guy that we've talked about a little bit before, Andrei Ilic. At Lille, he's popped up in there a little bit before in our discussions. Mm. He's that kind of player.
Mm. He was very good at, I think he, again, he played in Norway. I think he played at Vålerenga. I think it was.
Yeah.
From there to, yeah, he went from there to Lille.
Sorry, yeah, there we go.
Maybe he's just not played, that much this year.
Yeah. Well, he's gone there in Feb, isn't he? So again, it may be that that relates to the French league statistics. Yes. So he's going to have played enough games somewhere. So it's probably in Norway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they've picked him up. Yeah. I mean, they probably listened to our earlier episode, Tom.
Probably. Wouldn't surprise me.
Stuck into all our research. So anyway, he's number two.
Finder's fee, David.
Yeah. Raul Garcia. At Osasuna, he's number three on the list. 23 years old, another big, strong lad by the look of it. I mean, he's not a not prolific goal scorer, is he? But again, this is kind of, you're looking at him to do a certain job.
Going back into the 90s, I think it might be 1990 World Cup.
Yeah.
And Italy played... guy called Pierluigi Casiraghi up front.
Yeah.
Who I think could probably still be playing now and he wouldn't score. but the manager just felt that he complemented the other players so well. Like the things that he did helped the other players get the most out of themselves. So even though these guys might not be your 20, 25 goals a season strikers, perhaps they do just, especially when you're behind... You put them up there, they cause a bit of chaos. You know, you put the ball into the box, they're winning headers, you know, knockdowns, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's just helping you create more goal scoring chances.
Yeah, could be. I mean, there's a number of metrics in there. I haven't pulled them all out. I'd seem to remember XG was quite a high one.
Okay.
So, you know, it may be and shots and all that. And you know, because remember, if you have a shot, and it's parried and a teammate scores, it may be it goes under the radar. But if you're getting involved, as you say, you're causing trouble, it can be having a beneficial effect on the team, can't it? Even though you don't necessarily get a direct recognition of it. I'm not sure in this case. Well, as you know, that's another episode all on its own. So, and he moved to from Betis in the summer, didn't he, to Osasuna for €6.5 million by the look of it. So, again, he's kind of going to be, unless he's available, you never know. It could be that he could be available. Now we've got Shane Lavery, which is, again, I like seeing these appear.
Yeah, me too.
From Blackpool. Because I don't know, but it's just, if I'm a scout, I'm kind of pleased when I get handed something that is just it's sort of an outlier because you think, well, I don't know why he's in this. This is a worldwide search, not the top players of the world within that criteria.
Yeah.
But he's in there for some reason. And, you know, let's just have a look.
Yeah, exactly.
Another, you know, strong lad, I would imagine.
Going back to the biases thing, if someone said, do you know what we need to take a look at Shane Lavery from Blackpool.
Yeah.
People would look at you sideways, wouldn't they? Be like,
well, they'd think, hang on, What's your surname? Yeah. See, your brother.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they would do. And, you know, let's be honest, most of the time you're ruling people out because that's what happens.
Yeah.
It's like lots of other walks of life. You're most of these things don't go any further or much further. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're pleased to see something that's not too obvious, I think, at this stage, aren't you?
Absolutely.
He was at Everton, went over to Linfield, and then's come back to Blackpool. So, you know, we'll see. You can pronounce this lad because I know he's one of your.
I'm good. Favorites. I'm good with Polish names.
You're very good with them.
This is Simon Wlodarczyk.
There we go. Like a native.
Absolutely.
At Sturm Graz in the Bundesliga. So, following a similar. Okay, yeah, of course. Yeah. Following the similar sort of pattern there, 192 metres, 21 years old. These are sort of strike target men by the look of it, aren't they?
Yes.
A lot of these. And it seems like, I mean, it could be as simple as, and we haven't done it this way round, but, you know, very often when we used to go to the World Cup or the Euros, there'd be a clamour for, you've got to take Peter Crouch with you. Because he's just going to give you something that when there's 10 minutes to go and you've been doing all your sort of sophisticated build-up play and it's not working and you need a goal, sometimes just put Crouchy on because he's going to score you a goal or he's going to cause so much sort of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And this is perhaps just a way of, in a slightly more orderly way, getting around to recognising some of these things. But it's not been done. I think this is the point. It's not anybody's opinion, Tom, is it? We've looked at some numbers and they seem to be giving us this message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, get a big lad in there or you don't want to go. This is old. These are just ideas and opinions people hold. They've never tested them. You know, we're trying to kind of test something out.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's your.
Good stuff.
There's Wlodarczyk.
And of course, there will be other big centre forwards, but they've not displayed the characteristics or the attacking output that we've looked for. Therefore, it's not just a question of putting a 6'7" striker up there. We need to put the right kind of striker up there. And he just happens to be 6'4".
Yeah. And there might be some kind of cause and effect going on. That, you know, it tends to be the bigger, stronger strikers that register those numbers. But as you say, it doesn't just mean that that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
The physical presence isn't enough on its own.
Yeah.
But it tends to be one of the things that
he's still got to display that he has that aerial ability.
Yeah.
And the ability to do that. So, and I know some guys who are sort of 6'4", 6'5", who you couldn't slip a phone bill under their feet when they jump, you know.
They've never needed to learn to jump. That's why. I suppose, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, that's true. And then there's some other guys who are 5'10", 5'11", who could, you know, jump over a blooming car if it was coming.
Gary Speed comes to mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's all you want to see the output, don't you? Not just the physical numbers, but we're obviously getting guys here who are scoring highly in that. And they are, you know, 1m92, 1m96.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What I then did, Tom, because, I mean, a lot of these names on these lists, obviously, it's interesting to see names you haven't heard of, but it's also quite interesting to see names you have heard of. So just by way of a little sort of add-on, I suppose, I thought at the end of this, well, what if you just said, for whatever reason, maybe preference, maybe necessity. Mm-hmm. Well, we can only shop in the EFL. Yeah. You know, we can't look beyond that. Mm-hmm. What would come out of the same criteria searches and the same evaluation process from the Championship, League One and League Two? And I think, you know, we could take some of this with a pinch of salt, maybe, but I just thought, you know, it might be interesting to bring a few names in that, as I say, we've, you know, we all know and people will have an opinion of. So I've gone through exactly the same process, started with the sample midfielders, but this time just from the EFL. And I've been a little bit less critical on how many games they had to play. They've just had to play 500 minutes, and they can be any age and any amount of money, just because there aren't that many of them. So let's just get a decent number in the sample and they can fight it out.
Yeah.
So in this case, funnily enough, our friend Victor Torp is certainly in there at number two, but at number one is Joe Rankin Costello at Blackburn. And you might think, as I did, but how can he be, how could Torp be number one when you expand it out to the worldwide search, but only number two when he's within his own little pool of the championship only? Well, the reason being, because this will bring in some players that don't qualify for the other search. Like if Rankin Costello, for example, hadn't played enough minutes to get into the previous search, but he has to get into this search, then he would be in there. Or if his numbers were, you know, if his price or his age or something didn't match, or whatever reason, I don't know, but anyway, he's in there. So Rankin Costello's number one. And this is, again, it's a slightly, I mean, they've got him down in Transfermarkt as sort of right back, right midfield. So I don't know, you know, he's, the database I've used to get these numbers out have sort of categorized him slightly differently. But nevertheless, he's got the numbers. So, you know, in a way you could say, well, it doesn't really matter what, where they've categorized him, what role they put him in. If it's the numbers we're interested in, if it's the scores we're interested in, that's why he's qualifying. So Joe Rankin Costello, who I've always imagined, you know, I wouldn't mind having in my team, but there is a bit of, you know, confirmation bias or whatever, availability bias. But I wouldn't mind having him in my team if I went behind.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to compete. And, you know, Victor's number two, Victor Torp. So we're not surprised at that particularly. We've talked about him. And number three, and I've just picked the top three to have a little look at, it's Taylor Gardner-Hickman, who's at Bristol City. I think he went on loan from West Brom, but did they actually buy him in the end?
I think they had
an option to buy him, and I think they exercised it, did they? When,
yes.
Maybe when Vyman went the other way.
Yeah, it could well
not
have done.
Sure. So, yeah, I think he signed from in January. So, again, I think quite a competitive player. He just has the numbers that correlate with, you know, players that might help you get back from a losing position. So he's number three. So I've just done three for each. So this is still sticking with midfielders, but these are just League One. So everything the same, except we've changed the division from looking in the Championship to looking in League One. And we've got Callum Guy at Carlisle, though I have to say I don't know anything about.
No, me too.
Midfielder, 27 years old. You know, he's got certain attributes that, you know, put him in this list. So if you're a Carlisle fan, you may be saying, yeah, that's spot on, or you may not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But here are you. Tom Pett, number two at Cheltenham. He's 32 years old, by the way. So somehow or other, you know, I don't know, perhaps he uses his experience, or his, you know, perhaps he's got to be a certain way because I don't know what he was like as a younger player, but, you know, sometimes players mature into a particular style, don't they?
Yeah, he's come through non-league.
Yeah.
One of my old teams in there, Wildstone.
Okay.
Yeah, so you have, it's always good to have the Wildstone crowd on your side, I must admit.
Well, there you go. You would know more than me about
they're
that.
They're a good bunch. They're a lively bunch down there.
Are they?
I've really all liked playing down there. Yeah, it's good fun.
Well, they'll probably know about Tom Pett then.
Yep.
Yeah, they'll have a view on him one way or the other. So, and Luke Leahy at Wickham. Yeah,
he's been around a while, hasn't he?
He's been around a while, 31. Again, you know, you sort of see these patterns emerging. You tend to find certain similarities between some of these players, you know. Again, there might well be, if you dug into it, reasons for these things. Sometimes you see this. Sometimes you see, so that's the League One midfielders. Sometimes you see a club go for a player and you just can't work out. You go, I don't know what would have led them to that player. Like in this case, we're saying if you're a championship club and you've identified a weakness, i.e. you go behind and you can't seem to get back into games, what were you doing signing a player from League One who's not been good enough to get out of League One?
Yeah.
You know, but you see this happen sometimes, don't you? Uh-huh. And you think there's something going on there and I don't know what it is. And sometimes it works out and then you think, well, I don't know how that came about. But
no, that's it. And the thing is, we've seen lots of players come out of League One and dominate the Championship, haven't we?
Yes, that's true.
You know, with Ipswich, it's, you know, you've had guys who've done very well in League One and they've come up and they've done just as well in the Championship because we could argue they're playing a role that suits their skill set. So who's to say that you couldn't pull a Luke Leahy or a Tom Pett out of League One and then do a very serviceable job for a team in the Championship, just fulfilling that role? I mean, I've played in teams where we've had some midfielders who, you know, they can barely trap a ball or pass it 10 yards, but they're not asked to. They're asked to, you know, get in amongst things, break stuff up and give it to someone else as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And then just keep doing that, you know, literally.
But you know what? Joking apart, and that's the whole point, isn't it? Because it's a team game and your team is going to be quite a force if you manage to play in a style where each of your, really, you've put round pegs in round holes. Each of the skill sets of the team members is appropriate for their role in that playing style.
Yeah.
That's what it's about in the end. It's not about getting the best player. Again, I know I bang this drum till we're all probably sick of me saying it, but, you know, it is about having a clear idea of how you want to play, how that translates into the roles that those players have to exhibit and the attributes that they need to have to be able to fulfill those roles.
Definitely.
And that's the level at which you have to be getting into it, isn't it, really? So, maybe. I mean, I'm sure some of these we'll just dismiss, but there may be just a sort of enough interest in some of these to go, I don't think we might just have a look at this. Definitely. So this is the League Two midfielders. This is a real stretch, you know, for a league, for a Championship club to go into a League Two club and try and pull out a player. But remember, I think what we're looking for here, Tom, is we're looking for players that perhaps are our plan Bs. You know, they might not be our number one central midfielder, but they might be the one that we go, that's the sort of one we're missing, that if we need it, it could be the difference between getting back in the game and not getting back in the game. So we've got Jack Powell at number one from Crewe Alexandra at 30 years old. Again, you know, no spring chicken.
No.
Been around the block, you know, he's been at Millwall, been at Maidstone, been at Crawley, he's at Crewe now. So we've got Thomas O'Connor at Wrexham, 24, so he's a bit younger. Irish under 21 international. Uh-huh. And then Liam Gibson is their third one at Harrogate, who's 26, was at Newcastle. Again, you know, I guess we're sort of relying on people who know about these players, people who know about these teams, Harrogate Town.
Harrogate's a nice town.
A lovely town. Yeah, it's a lovely town.
I can tell you that.
Yeah, I don't know much about their team.
No.
So then it leads to the wide players from the Championship. We've got, well, let's just look at the top three. We've got top 20s for all these, but let's just look at the top three. I mean, we've got, for example, Dan James in at number 7, Robbie Brady in at number 5. It's a name. So let's just take a look. Ben Jackson at Huddersfield, number 1, 23 years old, you know, I think kind of fairly defensive minded, or at least they're playing him in that role at the moment. It suggests that he might be somebody who could help you if you need to get back into a game. Brad Potts at Preston, 29, you know, seen a bit of life as a player around that division and even lower than that. And number three, Brooke Norton Cuffey at Millwall. Is he on loan? Isn't he from Arsenal? Yeah, he's from Arsenal, yeah. Isn't he?
Yeah. That's
who I
right.
think's, yeah, I mean, young player, 20 years old. Very athletic, strong. I think you can see how he would be somebody who would be able to sort of take the game to opponents. Yeah. He's not going to sit around sort of making 10-yard passes. I think he's going to be up and down. And then we've got League One wide players. I'm going to whiz through these a bit. You know, you can see them if you want to look at them, but we've got the list there, but I'll whiz through them a bit, really. Barry Cotter from Barnsley, 25 years old, quite a good age. Jack Burrows at Lincoln, 22, good age. Previously at Coventry, I think he's on loan from Coventry. So again, probably got decent sort of pedigree.
Yeah.
And Hayden Coulson at Blackpool, 25. All three sort of pretty good age, I'd say. Mm. You know, from Middlesbrough, on loan from Middlesbrough,
yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah.
League Two, this is always a stretch, you know. I just think it's a real stretch to look at this and think maybe there's somebody there. But Joe Tomlinson, MK Dons, do you know him?
I know of Joe Tomlinson, actually. Yeah, he's having a pretty strong season, actually.
Is he?
Yeah.
23 years old. Yeah, seems like a good age again. So he went there from Peterborough in the summer then, by the look of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were really pleased to get him, actually.
Yeah. Good. Max Clark at Gillingham. 28, Max is. So, you know, he's been around the clubs a bit, hasn't he? Hull City earlier on. Looks like he went to Vitesse for a while, Fleetwood, mm-hmm. Rochdale, Stevenage. He's done the rounds a bit.
Yeah.
You might call him a journeyman. Joe Fawkes at Walsall, 20 years old, young player. Then finally, sample strikers from the EFL. These are going to be, I bet, I had a very quick sort of look, but a lot of them are going to be, when the lower down, they're going to be the same type of striker that we were looking at earlier. But Ryan Mayee, we conjured with the name before, didn't we? But I think that Stoke comes in at number one. Fans of the Championship have seen quite a bit of him this season. They brought him in among their other acquisitions, didn't they? From Ferencváros, he comes in at number one. Lukas Jutkovic.
Very well said,
Birmingham. Tentatively said, I think, but
yeah.
34 sort of years old, Lucas.
Defensive shot, that was, wasn't it?
Was a thing. Yeah, I think I got away with it. Yeah, so he's, you know, he's getting on. He probably knows the role he's being asked to play, doesn't he? Yeah. I mean, how well he's done for Birmingham, I'm not sure, but I mean, they've kept faith with him, so they must feel he's doing a job there.
Yeah,
big strong lad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it gives you that plan B, doesn't it? You can see why you might include him on the bench, say. And then Mileta Rajovic at Watford, who I'm not sure where they're going really, Watford, but it's another story. 24, good age.
My hometown club.
Is it?
Yeah, I used to go and watch Watford when I was a wee kid, go and see Johnny Barnes and everything. That ages me straight away.
It's a good team they had.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Graham Taylor.
Yeah, Graham Taylor.
So he's in there. Then we got strikers at League One level. Sam Vokes. I mean, these will be names we know about. You know, he's at Wickham now. But again, you know, if you're just kind of 34, it's going to be tough for somebody to come in and do something. But, you know, we've seen it before, really, where you bring a player in just to do a specific job, don't you, sometimes?
Yeah.
Martin Waghorn, again, we know all about.
Mm-hmm.
At Derby now, so you know he's been around. He knows what he does. Mm-hmm. Don't think he's not the same kind of player, is he?
No,
he's not a real physical build, dominating presence. But
he's obviously doing something right.
He's done some of the things that. Yeah, I mean, look at his list of clubs. God,
yeah, I know.
We haven't got time for them, but it'd be easier to name the ones he hasn't been at, wouldn't it? Really,
that's right, yeah.
And then Shane Lavery again, spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've seen him, touched on him. League Two strikers, we're nearly there, Tom.
Yeah.
Don't give up. Matt Smith. I mean, you know, Matt Smith's not going to be... I can see why he would be in there, but, you know, he's not going to get... that would be too much of a stretch, I think. Not because there's anything wrong with him. I think he does what he does better than anybody else, probably. But, you know, it's a real tough division now, so that isn't going to work out, really. Stephen Fletcher, I can't really see. Again, older players, they sort of do what they do, and they've probably, at that level, they're displaying the numbers, but can't really see that coming about again. And then finally, Matthew Stevens at Forest Green, 26, slightly different kettle of fish. Again, he's been around a bit. So I don't know, you know, somebody might know enough to say, yeah, somebody might do something with him.
Yeah.
But that's it, really. That's the sort of, I put those in at the end, really, just to sort of give us a touch of reality, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
But there we are.
Fantastic. Nice one, mate. So, yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed last week's episode as well, where we talked about, you know, how important the first goal was. And now we've sort of gone on a little bit more to say, okay, well, if we were a team that was struggling to get back after conceding the first goal, A, what are the type of players that we might need, or the style of play that we might need to revert to, which could be done during coaching sessions during the week? And then if we don't have the players to do that, who would we want to go for? And that this just gives you a start, doesn't it? And like we're saying, this is the very start of the recruitment process. This isn't the, oh, we see a player on here and we go, oh, right, well, let's start negotiations.
No.
This is the start of the funnel. And then we go through the technical scout, you know, watching them on their clips on the computers and what have you. And then if they get through that, then you'd start to think about sending out a scout to actually watch them. So, you know, this time of year, I think, is the perfect time to be looking at, you know, who you're going to be looking for the next window, isn't it? I mean, ideally, you've been doing this for a rolling, you know, time for the last 2 or 3 years. But, but it's not the time to be looking at it over the summer. It's the time to have an idea of what you want right now, isn't it? So as soon as that window opens, you're ready to go.
Sure. And it's I think it comes in when you're looking for these specific additions to the squad, you know, because this might even be beyond the first 11. This might be, look, we sort of know what we're looking for, where maybe the holes are in our first 11 and the ones that we know are going to do what we need them to do. But we've got this particular problem, which is when our game plan is disrupted because we concede first, we struggle to shift from our sort of plan A to our plan B. But what are the others doing? How come Ipswich are bucking the trend? How come Coventry and, you know, some of the others are doing well?
Mm-hmm.
And yet some of the others, like as up till recently, West Brom just couldn't seem to get anything at all.
Yeah.
So let's see if we can just, and there can be other, we've just talked a lot about the first goal, but there can be other particular situations, can't there, that you can identify and say, well, let's see who are the best at dealing with that situation. Let's look into their squads and their players and their performances, and let's see if we can figure out a pattern that seems to coincide, and we'll use that pattern of evaluation to inform our sort of, because you're filtering, you know, you're starting with 600,000 players and trying to get it down to 250, eventually trying to get it down to about 5 that you can go and watch.
Yeah.
But how are you going to do it? This is all aimed, as you say, at trying to sort of do it in an orderly way and in a way that matches your particular objectives and
that should
process.
You should always be looking to refine that process as well, shouldn't you?
Of course.
You're not going to, the first iteration of a funnel is not going to be right. It's not going to be perfect. You know, you've got to be ready for that. And then you just change it and adapt and adjust it accordingly, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you know what you're doing, you got half a chance, you know.
Yeah.
If you're not too precious about it and say, look, it might work, it might not work. This bit might be brilliant, it might be terrible, but we're going to try and make everything slightly better. Yeah. Gradually, yeah, that's what you're hoping to achieve.
I think that's where teams... I was reading, obviously, with the West Brom takeover going through, I was reading a thing about with Shilin Patel, and I didn't realise that he'd been quite heavily involved as an investor with Bologna for the last 10 years, I believe it was.
Mm.
And he said, Bologna have gone from being a very run-of-the-mill club to now being in fourth place in Serie A. So is that going to be the sort of way that West Brom go?
Well, maybe it augurs for West Brom, probably, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, at least you can look at that. And as he said, the importance is not to try and rush things, is not to try and say, right, well, next year we need to be in the Premier League. And I found that quite comforting, I suppose, for a West Brom fan, if I was one. That would make me think, well, he's not going to just go in there and say, right, we need to change everything here. We need to sack the manager. We need to bring this person in. We need to do this. That, to me, sounds like someone who's going to hopefully have a process and going to learn from what they've done in previous case studies as in Bologna.
Yeah, you could be right. And there have been good examples of that, aren't there, over here, mm-hmm. of clubs. And I think you talked about Plymouth, and I think they're a club that are trying to, you know, look at the whole thing, you know, mm-hmm. and their overall approach, of which recruitment is a big part, but it's not the only part, but trying to tie everything together. And we've seen it at Brighton, and we've seen it at Brentford, and we've seen gradually it's moving that way, isn't it, across the board. So, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, hopefully we're all talking the same language, really.
For sure. Well, I think that's probably going to be our record longest episode ever, David. But no, thank you for that, mate. Appreciate it. We'll come up with some ideas for next week, I'm sure.
I've no doubt you will.
And thank you to everyone for listening. And look forward to seeing you next week where we attack the Championship. See you soon. Bye-bye.